Hi there. Welcome to the Agency Toolkit Podcast, a podcast where we discuss stories, strategies, and techniques to help you build a successful and profitable digital marketing agency. Our episodes contain inspiring conversations with CEOs and entrepreneurs and leave you with actionable tips, ideas, and strategies you can implement into your business today. We are happy to have you with us. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and get inspired.
Hello, and thank you for tuning into another episode of the Agency Toolkit. I am your host, Julia McLaughlin. This episode is sponsored by ReviewRobin, a review management software for marketing agencies to help you guys get your clients more positive reviews. You can check that out at getreviewrobin.com. Now, our guest today is Barian McQueen of The Brand Castle. Barian is a serial entrepreneur, music producer, and branding specialist with years of hands-on experience in helping startups pave their way to professional career success. So today we're going to be discussing Barian's journey as an entrepreneur and how he's grown The Brand Castle. Thanks so much for joining us today, Barian.
I am ecstatic and pleased to be here.
Awesome.
It's a beautiful day in South Florida, so I'm ready.
Awesome. Yes, I'm very jealous of your beautiful Florida weather. I'm here in snowy Ontario, Canada, so.
Definitely changed.
Exactly. So why don't I ask you a few questions so that our listeners can get to know you a little bit. So what really motivates you and inspires you as an entrepreneur?
I think for me, I was raised by a single mom. So my mom, I felt like she did all the essential stuff that she needed to do, right? Like I had a roof over my head. I never went to bed hungry. I always had clothes on my back. But anything that was like extra, like family vacations and the new Jordan sneakers, that was out of the question. So it was just like, anything extra you want to do, you got to figure out how to get some money and do that. I'm doing the basic essentials here. And I think as a kid, it was just like, I always wanted nice things, but I knew my mom couldn't get them. So, you know, my first thing, I didn't do like the lemonade stand type thing, but I used to build bikes in my neighborhood for all the neighborhood kids.
Oh, cool.
I wasn't doing it the right way. Like I was stealing bikes. Let me rephrase that. I was stealing everybody's bikes in the neighborhoods. I was stripping the bikes and then building new bikes with everybody's parts.
Right.
For bikes. And I got in trouble. And my mom's like, you know, it was a little bit of genius behind that, but you're going to end up in jail very quickly.
Yeah, there's that entrepreneurial spirit in there, but not as ethical as it could be.
Right. So from there, I got into like the trading card thing. One of my friend's dad used to always have these like garage sales, but he never made no money off nothing but like tools that he sold.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, every probably tool you can imagine. So people used to always go for his tools. And he had these old baseball cards that he's just like, oh man, I don't do nothing with that stuff. And I took them and then I started selling baseball cards in the neighborhood. I had no clue what kind of merchandise I was sitting on. I just was selling cards and telling people that they was worth more than they were because they were older cards. So I'm like, you know, in the future, this is going to really be worth something. And this is a card from the 70s. And I had no clue what that stuff was worth. Internet wasn't big then. But people just, I guess I was a good salesman as a kid.
Your first taste of sales.
That was it. And I was selling playing cards, baseball cards. Upper Deck was the little packs you could get from like Kmart.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like my second business venture. I was probably 11 maybe at this time. And I think I always knew I had that in me.
Yeah.
But I just never knew where I was going to end up.
Right. So, that's so interesting. I love hearing stories about how that's just kind of shows itself within entrepreneurs at a young age, because most of the time that is the case.
And it was just about, I wanted some extra stuff that my mom couldn't get. So I was just like, figure out a way to go make some money. And as I got older, I started to actually get like real jobs, like sweeping hair at the barbershop and you know what I mean? Kind of, but I always, I felt like every time I got a job with somebody, I was in there working for somebody, but I was breaking down somebody's business model at a very young age, right? So when I was sweeping hair at the barbershop, I was noticing when I was sweeping hair, the barbers that I paid attention to the most tipped the best. So when their customers came in, I made sure their area was always clean. I would just, every piece of hair that dropped, I would sweep around their spot as soon as their hair dropped. So
yeah,
it was that customer service aspect of trying to grow within the company. I was just the hair sweeping guy, right? The guy that they send to the store to go get new clipper side and I need a new tape decks for the neck. And just, I was the errand guy. But I seen the need that the errand guy was always a middleman who had a need. He had a position that couldn't be replaced.
Yeah. So,
you know, you can get another barber anytime, but when you got a middleman guy that can facilitate, I always understood that early.
Interesting. And then, so tell us how you got into digital marketing.
So I think as a kid, I always was big on like, wanting people to see my logo. Like as a, I've been making logos since like a kid, like, but
that's so cool.
Back then we didn't know what branding was back then. So I was like, I didn't know I was a brander or a marketer. And then as I got older, you know, somebody said to me, they like, you know what you are? You're like a branding specialist. Like you got 20, as young as you are, you actually probably have about 20 years of experience just doing those things and doing website design and all of these things.
Yeah.
And I was just like, wow, I never looked at it like that. I never knew, it was just so natural. I didn't look at it like it was a skill set that I could apply to different businesses. So as I got older, I was still working for companies. But I always was, like I said, I was always breaking down a business and a business model that I seen, I started getting privy to how much money these companies were actually spending it on market for very little results though.
Gotcha. Okay.
I was just like, man, if I could just do half of that and provide better service and better results, I would only need 2 or 3 clients and I'm good.
Yeah. So tell us your story about starting the Brand Castle.
So I started the Brand Castle. So our thing was about, it was really like when we started that, we were just doing logo design, right? So we were just, you come to us with an idea, whether it was a rebrand or something from scratch, we was charging like $500 a logo. And that's how we started. We was just churning out hundreds and hundreds of logos. And then it was just like, I was tired of doing the logos. I'm like, man, how can I find somebody that just want to do logos and I could just drop service, right? I can just have them do the work and I just focus on bringing in the clients, right?
Yeah.
So, the bigger we got with the logos, all of those same people was like, well, we love the logo, but can you make changes to our website? So the company went where I didn't want it to go. Like I really just wanted to stick with logos, branding, content creation, photo, video, and that aspect of the name, the Brand Castle, right? And we just turned into a full-blown digital marketing agency.
Full service.
Yeah, I mean, it just was like, because it was new. So I was just like, I didn't want to, if I seen a client at the beginning, but I have the opportunity to have this client for a long term, I was just like kept adding services to our company, right?
Yeah.
So it was like, yeah, we'll do the logo and yeah, we'll do the website. And okay, now we got a website. Now we need SEO and now we need keywords and backlinks and PR. And we just kept adding a service every time.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how it grew. You know, I got a good team and put some systems in some place, but I hated the people that I worked for, how they did business. I hated how disconnected they were from their employees. So when I started to have my own employees, I always tell people me being a great employee made me a great business owner.
Yeah.
Because there was a lot of stuff that I learned that I'm like, man, these owners are so disconnected from their employees. There's no company morale. So the people don't feel like they want to be at work. So I never wanted my employees to feel like that. So, you know, one day out of the week, I let my employees pick where we're going to work from. So we'll go to the beach and work. We've worked at the bowling alley for the day. We've been at an arcade. It was just like, I didn't like the cubicle thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know, can people really be productive and multitask and still enjoy being at work? And I noticed people be at home all the time and they can work from their laptop and still they're watching a show on TV and they still got dinner going and they're multitasking and doing all of these things. And I'm like, why can't we do that in a workplace environment? Let's just change the environment so it don't feel like work. Mm-hmm. And it works. I don't think any of my employees, if they're seeing this, all, I hope y'all don't not like me, or I hope I'm a great boss. Like,
yeah. So yeah, talk about a little bit more about, you know, how you built your team culture, because that can definitely be challenging in a remote environment. And yeah, how you're really creating that, you know, loyalty within your team as well and building them up.
So I think I've a lot of people that have actually come to work for me, I think they always were just freelancers, right? Mm-hmm. So they were really good at what they did. They just didn't know how to bring in consistent work.
Yeah, take so it to the next like, level.
Yeah, so I was like, you know, if I've removed myself from doing all of these tasks and build the right people to do these for me, we're going to see the most success this way. And I did, you know.
Yeah.
I had great success when I was the one-man band branding guy, but it was just like I was burnt out. I was sacrificing just my time for the money. And it's just like, I can't scale this way.
Yeah.
That's how it was. I reached out to some people that was in a freelance space. And I'm like, look, you know, I see you do some great logos. How many logos you do a week? And they're like, oh, maybe 1 to 3. And I'm like, what does that pay you? You tell me what they pay. And I'm like, well, this is what I could do. And it was just like, and then I give them some incentive because I don't want them to, it's hard to convince people to work harder and it doesn't reflect their paycheck. It reflects, yeah. Right? So that's always incentive for me. Like I just randomly do bonuses and I try to do them fair, right? Sometimes it's based off performance, but yeah, sometimes it's just based off, I want you to be happy here. I want you to look forward to something, right?
Yeah.
And we could do like, whether it's a, you know, take them to a baseball game or a Miami Heat game, or, you know, we build some camaraderie outside of the office setting, mm-hmm. that it's like, oh, they're looking for, oh man, I wonder what we're going to do this year. Like, are we going to do the company picnic or the barbecue or the, so it's giving them something to look forward to all the time. And I think that keeps them happy. I've had people leave the company, not because they weren't happy.
It's going to happen.
They just wanted to do their own thing. And I, as an entrepreneur, I never want to discourage anybody from, because I did it, right? So I never want to discourage. I had a guy recently, he was my copywriter. Mm-hmm. He says, hey, Baron, you know, I'm not happy doing what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. Really good at it. But I said, so what do you really want to do? He's like, you know, I want to design apps for the phone. Like, I really want to design applications. That's my passion. That's what I do at home. It's all I think about. So I wanted to, you know what I mean, give my 2-week notice because I really want to pursue that. I was like, you don't even owe me a 2-week notice. Today you can start doing that. He was like so shocked, like, well, no, I wanted to give you a 2-week notice. Nah, today is the day you're going to pursue that dream. You are free to go. You don't owe me anything. And he was just like, nah, but you know, I want to be politically correct and do my 2-week notice. I'm like, I'm not that kind of guy. I'm not going to get the work I need out of you for the next 2 weeks. Your mind was gone probably before you sat and had this conversation with me. So yeah. I don't want to hold you up any longer. Go do your app and I wish you the best of luck. And if I can help you, trust me, this entrepreneurship thing is hard. It's yeah, not for everybody.
Absolutely. So, you know, what processes do you put in place so that you can let someone go on a whim and you're not, you know, being held back by any, you know, just the knowledge that they contain, and you're not, it's not leaving a gap in your company.
Right. I think the hardest thing about starting a company, and I think, I wouldn't say it was the hardest thing, but I think the best thing about me starting off as a solopreneur, right, was I could do every task in my business, right? I've always worked for people that I knew couldn't do what I did at the company, right?
Yeah.
So for me, it was just like, it made it easier to find great people because I know I was comparing them to my work, right? So it was mm-hmm. just like, I know I could do this if I need to. Like, I don't need it to where somebody calls off work and the company shuts down. I've worked for companies like that
who yeah.
wouldn't let me take a vacation because
they're so reliant on you.
Yeah. Yeah. So I never wanted that. So that's why I always tell people that me being a great employee turned me to a great boss, because these were things and gaps and holes that I've seen in companies that I worked for that I never wanted to happen.
Yeah.
So, so in that case, I always have two or three of everything. I have two or three of everything.
So you mean like for like the role that they have?
For the role. Yeah.
Got it.
So, and then like when somebody's going to leave, I always train my people from the beginning, right? So I never put that on the person that's already in that role to train, mm-hmm. which is why I don't like the 2-week notice, because if you give me a 2-week notice and I say, okay, well, I'm gonna bring somebody in, can you help train them and help navigate them these next two weeks? You're gonna train them the way you think works for you or the best mm-hmm. way. It might not even be how I wanted you to do it in the beginning. It's how you adapted what works for you, you know, what might be far from how I originally wanted you to do it.
Yeah. So
deprogram the person anyway. So it's I'm a little more hands-on, but I just let people do their thing. I'm not a micromanager. We got yeah. big CRM systems where if I need to see where a project is, I can log in and, okay, that's our milestone, and I shut it and keep it going.
Awesome. Yeah, no, it's really valuable. It's really important because especially if they have those really strong connections with the client, you never want to get in a position where a team member leaves and then it's really your relationship with that client has taken a hit.
That's it. I think that aspect of like me closing the deals, people trusted me as the business owner because I was always in people's face. Mm-hmm. So it was just like, if I'm taking on a new client, I don't know if they felt like they could always get me on the phone, but it was a comfort that even if they don't bother me, you know, they kind of have brand managers that they deal with directly, but I feel like I gave them the comfortability that if I need to get a hold of Baron, I can call him, right? I yeah. always want my face clean as the business owner and put some buffers in place, but they still feel comfortable like, oh, he's a real person. He's not going diss me or never take my calls if I have a concern. So I think that helps. So
absolutely. So I'd love to learn a little bit more about what your sales process looks like within your agency, you know, how you're bringing in more leads and then closing those sales with prospects.
When I started the Brand Castle, what I did for lead generation was I wrote down a list of, I guess we could say, industries or professions that I know could afford the services, right? Mm. So when I first started the company, I'm located in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Within a 10-mile radius of Fort Lauderdale, Florida, I've reached out to every dentist, doctor, med spa, people that had high profit products or services.
Right.
And I targeted them first because I knew they could afford it. Mm-hmm. I didn't do restaurants because that's based off how many burgers they're going to sell if they're going to deal with us, right?
But yeah.
I deal with stuff in people in the construction field where people were doing kitchens and bathrooms, windows and doors, that whole industry. I ate it up early on. And that's awesome. I just showed up. It was in a 10-mile radius from my office.
Yep.
I just showed up and said, hey, we new in the town. I'm the owner. Just wanted to let you know what we do. Or if you're happy with your current marketing company, let us do a free audit of your website. So I'm giving them something of value without having them to commit to anything.
Yep.
They're either going to take my audit and take it to whoever their marketing company is and say, hey, what's this dude talking about? Or they might not do nothing with it. Or they may call and say, hey, Baron, I got your audit here and there's some stuff I wanted to talk to you about.
Yeah.
Is it a sales tactic? Not really. It's like, these are issues on your site. We want to fix them.
Yeah.
And no, I think the thing with these business owners, like when I started off, they used to call me the anti-marketing marketer, right? Because I wanted to change, when people hear the word marketing, it's cringy to them. Like, I'm a marketer or I'm a marketing company, because people have had such a bad experience with marketing companies not delivering results.
Yeah.
That I wanted to change that. Like, I was super transparent with people about what stuff should cost. You know, I was working for a window company here in South Florida. And I asked the guy, you know, because I was kind of starting the brand castle after work. I asked the guy, I'm like, you know, what do you spend on marketing for this window company? And this guy was spending $12,000 a month. But he couldn't tell me where his leads came from. He couldn't tell me what the marketing company was doing. He couldn't tell me any of those things. But because the phone rang, he just assumed it was because of what the marketing company was doing.
Right.
So I was like, well, give me the report that they give you. I looked at the report. They were just spending $2,000 of the 12 a month on Google ads and was pocketing 10 grand a month. Just profit for 3 years.
Wow.
I was like, wow, man. If I can get three clients like this guy who don't care, I'm going to be sitting fat. But I wanted to change. I wanted to be transparent. So I was like, when I get into this marketing space, it's not going to cost $12,000 a month. It's going to be fair. And I'm for the small business owner, right? So how can I help? And how can you tell me what your budget is? And I can see how we can work with that budget and get you some results. So I think that was the difference. So we generated a lot of leads of just me showing up to people's office.
Interesting.
And then, you know, we've done some things with email marketing and but I think for different industries, different tactics work. The real estate agents love email. They on email all day long. So when we target brokers and real estate agents, they love email marketing.
Right.
So when we talking construction guys who ain't on their phone, they want to see you in person.
Yeah.
Right? So it's
or pick up the phone and call them.
Right. The old school, right? So it's like, you know, when you know who you target and your approach to generate the lead is always different. And I understood that.
Yeah. That's so interesting. And then, so how do you nurture the relationship with prospects?
Oh, I feel like I got to break up with people all the time. the worst thing for a marketing agency is to get the client who was very unhappy with their previous marketing company, and they want you to come right in and do magic. That client for me is the worst client. And then I just let them know from the beginning, I don't think this is, we're not going to be a good fit for you.
It's tough. And, yeah. They come in so tainted. You've got to do so much damage control. There's no trust. Yeah. It's tough.
You like a therapist. You're not really there to do marketing. You should add therapists to the, to your retainer, because they so, like you said, it's a stigma of like, okay, I'm gonna hire a marketing company and they're not gonna do nothing for me. I'm not seeing my ROI. And it's like, to me, I can't have a client tell me that a lead that they got was a bad lead. Like, that's disrespectful to me as the marketer, right? Because basically you have a service. This is somebody who's seen your service, who's interested in your service. It's just that maybe you can't close, or maybe you don't have the systems in place to fulfill the lead. So the bad lead thing is, I can't do it.
Yeah.
You can't tell me it was a bad lead, because every lead we give you is a warm lead. Where the lead goes in your funnel or in your CRM or in your system. Now that might be a system issue, not a lead capture issue. And I think a lot of business owners don't understand that aspect of the infrastructure, how they set their business up.
Like,
I got you the lead. What did you do with the lead? I can't be responsible for that too. I can't scrub the lead and call and make sure it's the budget you need. Like, we don't have time to do that. We just,
no.
You have a service, you have a product. This is somebody who's interested. Close it. I got a guy all the time. Baron, that lead was bad. That guy, you know, he only wanted this. And, you know, he's trying to nickel and dime me. But he called because you offered a service.
Yeah.
You have to find the medium in your art of negotiation where it's fair on both parts and the other person don't feel like they lost in the transaction. That's it. That's business.
Exactly. 100%. Yeah. That's definitely frustrating. And yeah, I think there's definitely an art to managing someone who has been burned in the past and who, you kind of have to take that really empathetic approach, but you know, at the end of the day, they just might not be a good fit. So it's hard to say.
And everything, you know, I always try to tell people, marketing is, there's no template, it's no formula. It's, we just collecting data and seeing how people, they do things online, right? We looking at patterns and trends. How do people search? How, it's never the same. It's constantly changing. Google's constantly changing. So we got to constantly be adapting to these new changes. So what worked 6 months ago may be obsolete. Who knows?
Yeah.
Keyword might not be, you know, you ranking for a keyword against people that are spending thousands. That, you know what I mean? So all of those things, I think, if you get business owners that understand that marketing is not, let me plug you into my marketing machine and push the button and then the phone rings. If you get them to understand that's not marketing, then you'll be all right.
Yeah, absolutely. So I would love to hear about one of the challenges that you've had to overcome while you've been growing your agency and how you've overcome that.
Whew, my biggest challenge was COVID. I left my job to start my marketing company. And that was, so I was doing the Brand Castle since 2015, but it was never, I was always doing it on the side, right?
Right.
That was my 5 to 9. So I would work with my clients or do stuff on the weekends. And they had no clue I was just doing everything from home because they was getting the quality and the results that they needed. And I was just working from a home base office.
Right.
In 2018, we got an office in downtown Hollywood. We started generating some bigger clients, big stuff that we were doing, Pepsi, Mercedes-Benz, H&M. We were doing some big things
because
we were big on content creation. So it was cheaper for these brands to hire us to create their content rather than them pay to get a specific model or get a specific film crew and get all of this stuff to create content for their ads. Their social media, they could just hire us and we had everything in house. So it made it easier and I'm sure it was half the price of what they would have paid. But
yeah.
So we've done those things. And then when we got the space in Hollywood, I started getting these calls like, hey, Baron, you know, I don't know if you know about, you've been following this COVID thing. And I'm like, no, not really. I'm just focusing, working. I don't know what it is. I'm seeing it on the news, but they like, yeah, you know, like, it's really affecting our business. I'm like, okay, so something to keep an eye on. Mm-hmm. But it hasn't affected me yet. But the fact that you're calling me right now, I guess it is affecting me, right? So I started getting these. I mean, I felt like I got the calls like back to back on the same day.
Yes.
It's like, is everybody together at a restaurant right now that they're all like, we got to call Baron and tell him about this. And I never believed in tying clients into like long-term contracts, right? Mm-hmm. So when I initially onboard a client, I asked for 3 months, like an initial period, and then they're free to go month to month after that 3 month initial period.
Right.
Because a lot of agencies, they like, yo, I need you for 6 months, or a retainer is for the year, the contract is for the year.
Yeah.
So it goes back to that, me being transparent and fair to the business owner. Like, look, you're not happy with the service, next month you're free to go. After you did your little introductory period, you're free to go. I don't want nobody, because you're not going to be happy, then you don't feel like you're married to me for the rest of the year, trying to get work out of me, and you're upset, right? So
exactly.
As I look at it, it probably was a bad idea because I lost a lot of clients during COVID, but you know, stuff happens. But I literally was getting those calls back to back. Hey, Baron, you know, this COVID thing, man, we're going to have to furlough people and, you know, cutting people's hours. And so, you know, marketing budget is one of the first ones we're probably going to have to cut. And I must have got that call. I got the first call at like 1 p.m. and I must have did that call from 1 p.m. to about 7 p.m. all in like 2 or 3 days of the same story.
Yeah.
And I'm just like looking at my wife and she's like, what are you going to do? Like, what's your plan moving forward? And I'm like, I left my job to start this. I got to see it through. Mm-hmm. And it just, you know, I had a couple clients that was just like, you know, Baron, we're going to just stick with you. Like we got to, and these clients stay with me. And it was like, but I had to let everybody go. Because it was only those two clients. So it was just like me just servicing those two clients was enough to hold me over to where we was just at least paying the bills aspect.
Yep.
And then it was just like, man, I don't know what I'm going to do. So I always believed in diversifying my portfolio.
Yeah.
So I own a real estate photography company here in South Florida. And that thing just blew up during COVID. I mean, just the housing market. I think we did six figures the first year.
Wow.
And it was just an out of a need to pivot because the marketing wasn't doing well. But because I understood marketing, I wasn't scared to start something from scratch.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you said, diversifying your offerings is so smart. And if COVID's taught us anything, that's definitely some very wise information.
Yeah, that's something new to think about. Like if you're thinking about starting a new business, think about how does a pandemic or a recession, is it recession proof or pandemic proof, mm-hmm. what I'm doing? Because that's nothing I even thought about when I was going to start my marketing agency.
Yeah, or just having an emergency plan in place, which, you know, some businesses have that organized ahead of time, but most don't.
Exactly.
So. Yeah.
But it was tough, but we slowly seen things turn around probably in the last year. I don't know where everybody got money from all of a sudden, but people started back calling and now we're back getting clients and new clients and people. I feel like a lot of people started launching businesses after. So we got a lot of just people that had no idea, but they wanted to start something. And we've been good now. So
awesome.
I'm blessed.
Yes, definitely. You just kind of got to roll with the punches. And as an entrepreneur, it's just something that goes with the territory. Sometimes you just don't know how you're going to tackle it, but you got to pivot. You got to make it work. And you come out on the other side.
Exactly.
So we are getting ready to wrap up here shortly. But first we have the Fast Five, which are five rapid fire questions. So
let's do it.
What's a book you've read that's made an impact on you?
Oh man, Grant Cardone's Seller Be Sold.
Love it. Awesome. And what does your morning routine look like?
Oh, it's awful now. I used to be so active. My morning routine is I literally get up. I don't know why I brush my teeth before I get in the shower, but I brush my teeth before I get in the shower. And I always have this big canister of water that stays by my nightstand. I drink the biggest sip of water every morning before I get my day started. But it's nothing crazy.
Yeah. Okay.
Right to the shower.
Yeah. And then get to work.
That's it.
And is there a CEO that you follow or study?
I love Gary Vee stuff. I like Les Brown. Actually, I'm reading his book, You Gotta Be Hungry right now. Les Brown and probably Jay-Z.
Nice.
I'm a Jay-Z fan.
Awesome.
Musically and in business.
Yeah. Yeah. He's so business savvy. And then what is your favorite online tool?
Oh, my favorite online tool is an app called Buffer. When we were doing social media management for our clients, Buffer, we could prep people's social media posts like for the whole month and never have to worry about logging in. So Buffer, I loved Buffer. It was just like one day at the end of the month, we prep for the next month and it's just on autopilot for social media.
Awesome. Just makes your job so much easier.
Most business owners hate social media and hate doing it.
Yeah.
They hate coming up with captions and what's the hashtag, they hate it. So Buffer is the best.
Awesome. And then last question, what's one thing you wish you had known when you began your career?
Whew, that's a good one. I wish I would have known more about business credit before I started business.
That's a good one.
I was always big on, just growing up, I always thought the whole cash is king thing. And as I got older in business, I wish I would have understood what I know now about financial literacy and using business credit that I didn't know before. So.
Awesome. Such a great tip. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Barian. It was a pleasure to have you on the show, and I really enjoyed our conversation.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Agency Toolkit. We hope you've learned something new that you can implement into your agency today. If you liked this episode, please subscribe to our podcast, and we'll see you next time.